And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus on this Monday, February 3rd. Yeah, we're already into February, and it's starting to look like it out there, finally. We've got snow across, light snow across much of the area, some spots in the far southern valley and into Lakes Country picked up 3 to 5 inches of snow, but generally around the FM area and points northward, it was an inch or less. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki alongside our Ag Director Bridget Arredo. And Bridget, how was the weekend?
Going well. Woke up to some snow this morning. Right now I'm in northern Cass County. We have some light flurries. Looks to, as I look at radar, we're probably going to see some things to the north of us right now. Road conditions show that it looks snow covered. Hopefully once I get on the road here after the show, I'll know a little bit more about how they look. And there's some icy stretch that goes from West Fargo to Castleton. You know, the one that's always icy, mm-hmm. You guys. So everybody slow down for that one. It's going to happen. But it does look like most of our snow has moved out from what I can see on radar.
Yeah, we've got a little bit. We're still snowing here in the FM area. And the back edge of it, about from Gardner through Mapleton. So it's about ready to exit the valley. And after that, we will start to see winds increase a little bit as we head into the afternoon. And that will lead to some blowing of the snow. A bigger problem in areas of Lakes Country and down in the far southern valley where there were higher amounts. And then the winds will die down as we head into the overnight. We're stuck in the single digits today, 5 to 10 below tonight. And then as we head into the rest of the week, tomorrow will be quiet with light winds. Another snow event comes our way on Wednesday, more than likely blanketing us with about an additional 2 to 4 inches. Wednesday afternoon and into Wednesday night, and then the winds ramp up on Thursday behind that system, so we'll have blowing snow to deal with then, and then another system. It's like a whole train of these. Another one coming in over the weekend, and we said last week we're about ready to enter the stormy part of the LRC cycle, and this will be back, so mark your calendars. This will be back in about another full 42 to 45 days, figure 43. So you can mark your calendars. That would put it at, what are we looking at? End of March. So hopefully by then it's rain, but I wouldn't bank on it.
I would plan for that. Normally we get some snow about that time because we're just, that tail end of calving season. But as you said, snow today. We're going to look at snow again later in the week. So really, we've got several systems coming along, it looks like, right?
We do, yeah. We've got three this week. And then looking even further down the road, probably another two additional systems before we get to about the 21st. And that's when we should start from the 21st through the end of the month. That's when we should start to see things start to quiet down a bit. So that's good news there. And we need the moisture. We really do.
Here's the thing. Right now, not even really worried about the moisture because it's not going to matter. Our ground is froze and we're not going to be able to do anything about it anyway. So if we were going to get snow, let's get it a little bit later when it's something that we can actually stockpile and keep. I mean, right now it's really not going to do us all that much good. So we'll see what things look like before too terribly long.
Yeah. But we're working on having Gary on the show this Wednesday. I'm still waiting to hear back from Gary, but I want him to give us an update on the LRC, what planting season looks like, take a kind of a sneak peek into through early summer and see what we can expect up here in the Northern Plains. So hopefully we get Gary on Wednesday with us and we'll see what more the LRC is forecasting for this spring and maybe a peek into early summer. It's never too early to look for towards summer, is it? I don't think so.
Yeah. Mother Nature really levels things out for us. Eventually she just says, okay, this is what you're going to get. And it might be a bunch of rainfall all at the right time because as many of us in the ag world would say, well, it'll bring the frost out of the ground, right? Once we get that warm rain.
True. True. Yeah.
Yeah. Usually well thought of. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
And so this weather update is brought to us by Ryan Bonesack. He is with Equitable AgriFinance, providing long-term fixed rates for farmland financing. He wants to work with you, your farm, your ranch, and you can give him a call at 701-261-6529. Thanks to Ryan for looking out for our listeners as well as he does. We much appreciate that. So much going on. In fact, if you are curious about doing a little bit of training, a lot of us have been through first aid training. So many folks in rural areas go ahead and are taking first aid responder. They are part of their ambulance squads and so much more. And one other thing that folks can do comes to working with mental health. There's a training that's currently being offered this week, and it's actually being done by South Dakota State Extension. North Dakota does it as well. It's called QPR, Question, Persuade, Refer. It is a 60-minute evidence-based training, teaches three simple steps that anyone can use to help find the warning signs of suicide, how to offer hope, and get people the help that they need. If you are interested, not just because you live in a small community, but you want to help within your church, your school, and so much more, this webinar will be held at noon. And it'll be on Tuesday this week and Thursday this week. If you are interested, you can drop me an email, ag@flagfamily.com, and I will send you the link. It's free, but they do want to have a headcount and make sure to get all the registration information to the right people. So if you could please drop me emails, I will forward that on for you. Busy week of events going on, because we not only have this QPR training that's going to be held, but tomorrow is Northern Corn and Soybean Expo. That will be held out at the Red River Valley Fairgrounds, put on by the North Dakota Soybean Council, Corn Utilization Council, soybean growers, and the corn growers. It is a full day of events. They're going to kick things off tomorrow morning at 8 with anticipation of an end time about 5 o'clock. So it'll be full, thought-provoking, and very busy. Their agenda includes geopolitics, renewable fuels, and stability. And for corn growers, that's a big discussion. Farm machinery, grain marketing outlooks. They'll be looking at the forecasted farm economic crisis and what does that mean to you as a grower. There'll be a mini trade show going on, and for those of you who are in the region, it is free. Drive on out, take part. They have great speakers. You definitely want to stop in and take it in. You can pre-register, but if you just managed to make it over there that day, and I know some of you are very interested in hearing what that forecasting looks like for markets, economics, the whole political system we're in right now, I think it's worth it for a lot of people to get connected and find out more. So we really appreciate that corn and soybean organizations are putting that on tomorrow. And then additionally, on Wednesday, Agronomy on Ice will be held at Devil's Lake. That's a one-day event. That's all about fishing, farming, and tailgating, if you will. So there'll be lots of food and lots of folks to visit with. Quite a number of folks are already planning, have registered, everything from students coming to look for internships, employers looking to hire them, as well as those who just want to talk about what in the world are we going to do for 2025. I mean, there is planting considerations to be made. Folks are watching markets. This whole tariff thing is a headline within itself. About every hour it changes. So good to see that folks want to get out and visit and learn more if they can.
Did you say that's Wednesday, Bridget?
That's Wednesday. Yeah. Okay. It's super cold. You don't want to haul grain that day, guys.
Well, and I mean, they'll have fresh snow up in the Devil's Lake Basin too on Wednesday. So they'll see it. We'll see it. So fresh snow, cold weather, perfect for quote unquote tailgating and ice fishing.
It's a regular day right? in North Dakota in February. So
how many people do they get up there for that typically?
Oh, we'll have several hundred up there that day.
Yeah. Okay.
The folks will be, in fact, there's houses being set down today. Folks are already out there pre-fishing in anticipation of what will be happening.
I'm sure.
And then also the folks that are getting on up there, they want to make sure that they have advertised well. So there'll be signs that, big flags that show who's there, what house to stop in, and there's many. So make sure to stop in and visit with all sorts of folks while you're up there. And for this week, weather-wise, it's no different than in the summer months when you golf and it's really cold or really hot, you don't stop generally. So for the winter, when you have winter activities, nobody really stops. There were lots of folks out snowmobiling. There was winter golf this last weekend in my community, and there's a lot of things that people just do, whether or not the weather cooperates very often. So we'll see what that looks like. Much to do.
And we're going to be talking a little bit of old-time farming, old-time tractors today.
Not that old time. Actually, for many of you who, especially in western North Dakota, there was a tractor built out in the Crosby area by a fellow by the name of Jerome Knutson. And Jerome was kind enough to send me this whole brochure. I sent a copy to Dean on an email that's got details in it, because in 1967, young farmer Jerome Knutson decided he wanted to start building a better tractor. He needed something four-wheel drive, heavy horsepower, wanted an articulating tractor that could manipulate the larger farm equipment that he wanted to be pulling. And so Jerome just decided to build it himself. Some unique features were a part of this, as well as something like a 6.5-foot cab that allowed you to stand up and stretch every once in a while. He made the seat differently and all sorts of great ideas. So we're going to catch up with Jerome, who again was the builder and inventor of the Knutson tractor. There's a couple different models, and we'll talk about the history of that and what it looked like. So excited to see how the Knutson tractor evolved over those years. I remember his son being on the cover of the National FFA magazine when I was in high school, and thought that was really cool that a kid from North Dakota was part of an operation like that, where they were building their own tractors.
Right.
So, very neat. Yeah, we're going to check in on that. One thing as well before we stop for markets with the American Ag Network, U.S. Fish and Wildlife has made a request. There is a public comment period that's open right now when it comes to the monarch butterfly. They are debating whether or not it should be a threatened species. And so this is an opportunity for those who are not only farming, but anyone who has interest in the butterfly to make their comments. And I strongly recommend that particularly those who farm and have pasture land go in and make those comments by March 12th. The reason is so many regenerative and conservation projects have taken place that the monarch butterfly environment is being helped more and more every year through natural practices. And I think it's important that U.S. Fish and Wildlife knows about that, as well as others. So get on in there and make those comments. If you're curious what the docket number is or how to make the comments, you can always email me, ag@flagfamily.com, so I can try to help get you hooked up for that. But as Dean mentioned, we'll be back with our guest, Jerome Knutson from the Knutson Tractor Company in Western North Dakota, right after this. Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. Thanks for being here with us this afternoon. There might be a few flurries in the air to the northern end of the valley, but certainly more to the south. So for those of you who are itching to get your snowblowers and snowplows out, I bet today is probably your day. Dean, you said upwards of 3 to 5 inches of snow for some of those areas.
Correct? Yeah, Southern Valley. Let's see, Hankinson through Wadena, Alex, they all picked up 3 to 5 inches of snow. While we were kind of shortchanged here in the FM area, we picked up just under an inch. So, I mean, hey, you know, it's we've got more in the forecast. In fact, if you want, go to WDAYRadioNow.com, and I just put an article up there about a half hour ago about how much snow we're expecting through Saturday, because we've got two more systems coming in. And most of our models are in pretty good agreement that much of the area is going to really get some much needed snowfall. And so that's good for, you know, if you're making money off the snow, if you want to get out and take the sleds out, cross country skiing, any winter activities, finally. It took a while, but like I said, we're in the stormy part of the LRC cycle right now. And this was expected, and that's good news. So we'll take what we can get, because we've been lacking not only snowfall, but we've been lacking moisture so far this winter as well. So this is good news. It really is.
And speaking of good news, Addison is working very diligently to make sure our guest Jerome is connected. We might just be able to visit with him by phone as soon as that's up and running. So we'll have him here shortly, okay. I think, from the sound of it.
And I just got a confirmation from Gary because Bridget, you're going to be gone on Wednesday. So, yes. So Gary will be joining us, and we will be breaking down more of the LRC throughout the rest of the winter and the upcoming spring. So be sure to tune in on Wednesday. Gary always welcomes, and so do I, any questions. We can kind of break down your specific area for you if you'd like. And it's always a wealth of information when we have Gary on. So looking forward to that this coming Wednesday.
And Gary, I was reading this weekend in Dakota Farmer, and a friend of mine is the editor over there, Sarah McNaught. And Gary's going to start joining them on a quarterly basis on their podcast. So for those of you who subscribe to Dakota Farmer, check them out. Gary has already made his first appearance on that podcast, and we're looking forward to hearing more as he talked about the weather across the U.S., but we'll definitely focus on the northern region for all of us.
Good deal. Good deal.
So, yes. So we now have our guest, and that is Jerome Knutson. Jerome is with the Knutson Tractor Company. And tell us a little bit about how the Knutson Tractor began.
Well, after high school, I went to Wapato State School of Science and got a degree in automotive and diesel maintenance. And in 63, got married, farmed with my dad. We had a couple of John Deere tractors that put out about 180 horsepower. And in 1967, when I was about 24, I decided I could maybe build my own and replace both tractors with one. At least that's what I tried to convince my wife and my dad of. And I started in 67, and I finished it up in the fall of 68, and we started using it that fall. Then in about 1971, after that tractor was successful, and that one is still operating, by the way, I built one for my dad. He asked me to build one of the bigger one, so I had a 335-horse Cummins six-cylinder that I put in it. It was a new engine, and everything was new in the tractor. And that, for 1 year, was probably the largest tractor built. And about 1972, or the year after that, I was at a show, ag show in Minot, down at the Civic Auditorium. And a dealer came up and asked me to take over the sales of the tractor. And so I did, and we had made an agreement. And I built three more tractors, two of them at 310 horse, which I sold locally, and one at 350, which was sold in Colorado. I continued to build some tractors, and I started doing more promotion, especially out west. They asked me to come out there. And in 1975, at a luncheon in Pomeroy, Washington, I had a slide presentation that I made that I showed to the people. And I had a picture of my tractor with the right front wheel up on a bank of dirt and the left one down below, and the tractor was sitting level. And a farmer said, "Hey, you've got a hillside tractor there. Why don't you bring it out?" And it's just like the light bulb went off that you hear about. And I decided I could probably take and put a front suspension in the rear, so I had both of them, and come up with a hydraulic leveling device, which I did. And I land up getting a mercury leveling board from R.A. Hansen, which made the ones for Alice Chalmers combines, and put that in, and that worked out quite well.
So,
continue on,
Jerome,
guess.
If I can ask a couple of questions from you. So sure. One of the things that I read about your tractors was that you wanted to change pretty much the articulation. Most tractors at the time were different from what yours became. You were able to bring out crab steering on those articulating tractors, correct?
As somewhat. Steiger had okay. just gotten started shortly before or about the time I did it, when I was in college down in Wapato, and they were successful. And then Versatile really got going quite well because they built very inexpensive tractors. And I kind of copied mine now for the International and Case four-wheel drive, which had the crab steering in it. And that was the easier one for me to build because I could use a rigid frame and use steering axles.
Okay, gotcha. Well, all right, Jerome, don't go anywhere. We've got bottom of the hour news we want to touch on, but I not only want to ask a bunch more questions, but we're going to show pictures of the tractor that you built and how you were doing that. So hold tight for our break. And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion with Jerome Knutson. He is from the Crosby, North Dakota area, and we're talking about the tractors he began building, the Knutson Tractor. We'll be right back. Welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus. Thanks for being here this afternoon. I'm especially excited to visit with our guest today, and that is Jerome Knutson. Jerome is from the Crosby, North Dakota area, and we're talking about the Knutson Tractor. It's already had its 50th anniversary. Some of you who have farmed or been a part of agriculture in Western North Dakota might remember seeing this very iconic tractor. It was green, but a different green than John Deere or Steiger might have been. And so, Jerome, I got a couple questions about this tractor when you were building it. Your okay. first tractor was a little bit lower horsepower. The second one you built, starting for your dad, had 335 horsepower. Very powerful. Right. What were you pulling for implements that you wanted to take that jump in horsepower?
Well, we had had two implements together, but it was still an issue. And I ended up coming up with a drawbar that would pull anything from 210 foot to 248 foot rod feeders. And we used that to hook two discs behind or two cultivators. And I built those for a couple of years and sold those.
Wow. There's, out of all of the years that you built, there were, correct me if I'm wrong, there were two models, but how many tractors did you build on the farm?
I actually built about 22 tractors on the farm, and then we got a facility in Crosby, and we finished up the last one in Crosby and also built a hillside in Crosby. And then after that, well, that was another part of the story.
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. Anyway, we land up doing some work out in California in 1978, and they had a drought that year after a couple years of working out there. And they land up taking about five tractors out there, almost all of them were 360 horsepower. And then the drought came along, and that market really did dry up. And I landed up designing a hauler with the cab out in the front end using a 360 horse Deutz diesel air-cooled engine. And you could spread the farm out, the frame out for using with a truck as a truck, or you could collapse the frame and use it as a farm tractor. That one was in operation for a number of years. And then finally, I just couldn't withstand the drought as far as sales were concerned. And so I closed the factory down. Then the next year, a company in Holdrege, Nebraska, landed up buying the patent and the rights to the tractor. And then they hired me as a consultant for a couple of years. And they came out with a yellow Knutson. And they built those up into the late 80s. And I ended up buying one of those on an auction sale out of New York, and I use that on my farm. I also have a couple of other ones that I got back at auction sales or whatever locally, and I have a 360 that I used for 47 years on my farm, and that one's got over 14,000 hours on it. So it was successful, and it was a very interesting adventure, to say the least.
And Jerome, how many of these hillside tracks, how many are still in commission?
As far as the ones that are actually used in the field right now, probably none.
Okay.
Tractors that start getting 50 years old while you don't
sure.
use them, obviously.
Yeah.
But they're still around. You know, they've... I know there's two or three of them, four of them in Minot, North Dakota, a fellow that collects tractors, collected some of those, and I've had, there's one still sitting, I see it every couple of years out by Walla Walla, Washington, and they're here and there and all over, but not in use as far as I know.
Okay.
Except mine.
Right.
Well, yeah, because Jerome, you have several on the farm, and one of the distinct features that you have was the cab, and you chose to build your cab
right.
in a whole separate module, if you will. Talk about that cab, some of the features that you made, and why it was so renowned at the time.
Well, at the time, by using a rigid frame like I did, I was able to have a cab that was 6.5 foot clearance inside, so you could stand up in it, and it was about 5 foot square, so it made a comfortable cab. Also, at that time, everyone who was building cabs made it as part of the tractor. In other words, the dashboard came inside. Mine was completely separated and mounted on rubber mounts which was a first in the industry. And so it was quiet. You could talk in a normal voice. It's about like running a truck as far as the noise was concerned. So that was a big change. It was also easier to get in and out of it using the steps rather than, that I had, like a regular pair of stairs rather than a ladder type unit. So that was one of the nice features I had. My kids would ride with me and take their nap and eat their lunch and watch videos, and it was great.
Okay, Jerome, I got to tell you, as a kid who spent a lot of time in a 1066 case, or IH, yep. I should say, and it wasn't, it had a cab, but it certainly wasn't Soundguard. It was loud. It was dirty. You talked about the seat, making sure that the armrests lifted or were higher so you could slide your legs under and still have back support when you had to turn to the side. I would have loved to have had that cab in my, like, 11, 12-year-old life.
Right. Well, you know, it was difficult at the time to sell something that new. Four-wheel drives were just starting, and there was certainly a lot of competition out there, not necessarily from the majors, but from a lot of independents such as myself. And it was, I learned a lot, let's put it that way.
I bet. Now, with that, the hillside hauler, as you call them, you know, because we've got a picture on our live stream right now where you can see
those
how the
cool,
cab stays level. yeah, but the axles are at a tilt because of the hillside. Can you describe a little bit about what it, you know, you obviously witnessed some of these folks using them out in the Palouse in Washington State and so forth. Can you kind of describe why it was such a great feature for those folks out there?
Well, I had a group from Spokane area that wanted me to build a tractor that they could chase combines with and unload the combines on the go in the hills out there, which some of them are very steep. And I presented a design to them, and they said, hey, that looks good. I think that'll work. And so then I had a company out in down by Walla Walla, Washington, that built the hauler, the box board for the grain, and then I built the tractor. And I wanted it to be used not only as like a truck, but I also wanted it to be used as a tractor during the rest of the year. And it was quite interesting. I remember pulling about 60-foot of rod weeder behind me out in Palouse, and I got to the top of the hill, and I had to put which the cab was right up front, I had to put my face up right against the windshield to see where it was going to go downhill. And when I went down the hill, the dirt from the rod weeder passed me. So it was.
That's not really a great feeling, I bet.
Well, a lot of the hills up there, out there that they combine and feed their grain in, you have to get on your hands and knees to crawl up the hill.
It's incredibly steep and very fertile ground. You know, they have some tremendous yields that come out of that region, but whew, it's not for the faint of heart if you're going to be running equipment out there.
No, I take some of those level landers to people that live in our area, and we'd go out in the trucks and we'd start climbing the mountains, and they would get scared enough so they didn't even want to look out the sides of the windows for the trucks. So it's certainly different.
So Jerome, when you were building these tractors, was it hard to put them together? Was it hard to source your materials in order to start building the tractor? And did you ever get any comparisons to the Big Bud that was being built at the same time frame, I think?
Yes, Big Bud was, and there was a Jackson tractor, and there was an Erickson tractor. There's one built down in Texas, and there were other ones there. Those tractors, Big Bud landed up building his tractors in the late middle 60s because Wagner was one of the very first successful ones, and John Deere had about 30 or 40 of those made, quit building them. And they needed a source for their people out in Montana. And so that's how that one got started. And so we had about the same market, but a different philosophy. And they, of course, couldn't make the hillside tractors like I could. So, and one of the advantages of my hillside, I could do it with the crab steering, which would compensate for sliding down the hill. And also, I would be able to put weight on the upper wheels rather than all of it on the lower wheels. So it gave me a traction advantage.
You know, one of the things that I think is really cool, the amount of toy tractors that have been made of the Knutson tractor. Do you have an idea how many different models were designed based on your tractor?
I think it's around 15 different models that they made, whether it be the standard or hillside or the hauler or and the different models of the hauler, because we had planned of selling one for flying sludge from out in the fields in Wisconsin. And so, you know, you just had to have different options. But, yeah, there's quite a few of them out there.
How many of them do you have?
Of the models?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe 20, 25 different ones. I have all the different ones. And then my kids have some. There were some larger ones built that were maybe about 10 inches high. And so I think they built 300 of them. And surprisingly, somebody copied them and sold them. Sold the copies. I never did see one of those, but anyway, my kids do have copies of, or do have some, and I have them as well, both sizes. And I just keep some on hand just for special occasions.
Those are pretty special. All right. I'm hoping someone was able to take one of your tractors and made sure it's in the Toy Farm Show Museum down in Dyersville. Hopefully someone got that submitted for you.
Doug Groppi, which was one of the people that I worked with in Crosby, he's the one that made the green tractors, and he was down there selling them, so I'm sure there's some in that museum.
That's very neat. Jerome, I really want to say thank you for sharing the brochure with me that you did. It even has, you know, on the back side of it, and Addison's got that on our live stream, you know, what the ad looked like for you, you know, talking about the power, the comfort, the quiet, and the crab searing. These were a neat tractor. Very cool that they came out of North Dakota. And above all, thanks for taking time to talk about the Knutson tractor with us today, Jerome.
Well, thank you very much for interviewing me, and I really appreciate it, and sometime we'll visit again.
I bet we will. Nothing gets people excited like farm equipment, whether it's talking about old iron, new iron, et cetera. Folks are very interested in talking horsepower and so forth, and I have no doubt you'll get lots more phone calls soon. So we appreciate it. Thanks, you, Jerome.
Well, thank you very much for the interview.
Alrighty, folks, don't go anywhere. Going to want to check on that weather, especially for the Southern Valley, and a couple more headlines. We'll do that when we return.
And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus on this Monday afternoon. It's 1:51, and but what an interesting guest. I mean, you know, and to think he's still got some of the toy tractors, that's those have got to be worth something, I would think.
They're a pretty rare item,
yeah.
And just the fact that Jerome came into his shop one day and said, I'm going to design and build a tractor. Now, look, not everybody does that.
No.
But he did.
Man, at 25, too. Man, in his 20s?
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
So I can do this. I can fix this. So that's awesome for him to do.
Good for him. Well, we've got some more typical February weather that's heading our way. We did pick up a little bit of snow this morning, and most areas around the FM area picked up about a half inch to an inch. But from the Southern Valley, let's say from Hankinson through Lakes Country, anywhere between 3 to 5 inches down to our south. So those areas are going to be dealing with a little more blowing snow issues this afternoon, but the winds will calm down as we get towards sunset. And we're looking at temperatures in the single digits all day long today. And then tomorrow, light winds, mostly cloudy, but I think we will see some sun mixing in from time to time tomorrow with highs around 10 above. And then another system brings about 2 to 4 inches of snow on Wednesday. with highs in the teens, and then the winds whip that around on Thursday, and then another system comes in on Saturday with another 2 to 4 or 2 to 5 inches of snow as we head into the upcoming weekend. So, not any one of these storms is going to be anything that's going to shut things down. But when you add up each storm and you're getting 2 to 4 here, 2 to 4 there, we're going to have a pretty good snowpack by this time next week. And, you know, you get any wind with that, and that's when you start having the problems with blowing snow, because this is that light, fluffy stuff, and I don't see us warming up. And we're stuck in the single digits and teens through this week and next week as well.
Well, it's February. We're there. We're
exactly.
Ready. It'll happen.
Yeah, it's nothing we haven't seen.
So in a little bit of breaking news out of North Dakota State Legislature, many of you who may follow me on social media know that I am not shy about being a very large proponent of rhubarb. I am a rhubarb advocate in many cases. Sometimes I have to explain to others how it is a necessity, not a weed. And this does make me smile just a little bit. It sort of shows that even in politics, we can have a moment of smiles. And that is House Bill 1334 has passed through the House on its way to the Senate. And that is the bill that would make rhubarb the state vegetable. So I look forward to that passing. If I need to go to Bismarck to testify, I will take samples and show it off and help people understand why rhubarb is such a big part of our history and culture in North Dakota. And why shouldn't we have a state vegetable? People have other things. We could have that.
And were you part of pushing that through at all?
I may have given an endorsement a time or two. And maybe at Agronomy on Ice, I should have some, you know, advocate rhubarb buttons to wear so people can see how much I'm in favor of getting this thing moved along. It's vitally important in my world.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I love it.
Nothing wrong with it.
Love it.
Now, for those who might be looking for something different in their diet, here's a little story for you. The Swedes have long eaten a pudding that has colostrum in it. That is a cow's first milk that is given to the calf. It has growth factors, nutrients, prebiotics, probiotics, antibiotics, and immune boosters. And it's really like a kickstart for calves. Well, humans are starting to think that it should be good for their overall health as well, maybe immune and digestive systems. So consumers are creating more of a demand for colostrum than we've ever had before. It's really jumped in questions. People are also looking for a market where they can do something new, like colostrum supplements, powders, and even pharmaceutical products. We are going to see more research being attributed to colostrum and human health to see what it may do for us. But that is one item that people are just looking forward to giving a try, is having colostrum as a bigger part of their diet.
Have you tried it, Bridget?
I used to have to give colostrum to calves. I have different opinions of it. I mean, it's fine, but I'm not rushing out to it. I'll tell you that much.
Okay. But if it has a bunch of great, yeah, you know, health benefits, that's fantastic.
If it has a bunch of health benefits, and I think that may always be yet to be proven. I don't want to jump on a bandwagon until I know. I'm a little bit slower to that type of thing myself.
Okay.
Now, maybe you want to add that to your recipes and dishes that will be happening for this weekend. Don't forget, with the Super Bowl coming up, couldn't do it without those in farming and agriculture. The National Chicken Council, yes, there is one, reports that there will be over 1.5 billion chicken wings eaten on Sunday.
Wow.
Billion chicken wings. And for those of you who are thirsty, 52 million cases of beer are sold every year during the Super Bowl. One bushel of barley, which we do raise a number of those bushels right here in North Dakota, that will make 565 12-ounce beers. So keep that in mind. No beer, no barley, no beer. Let's put it that way. And folks are looking forward to that for Super Bowl weekend.
So what were the numbers on the chicken? I'm trying to figure out, was there more chicken wings being consumed, or is there more beer being consumed?
I think you got to figure out what the ratio of chicken wings to beer is, because you got 1.5 billion chicken wings and you're looking at 52 million cases of beer. So you now have to take cases, multiply that times individual can. Now you need to have a beer to wing ratio. There's a way to look at this.
All right.
Plus, the turf is a drought-tolerant Bermuda grass. The ball comes from cowhide leather, even though we call it the old pigskin. And oftentimes, football uniforms have quite a bit of wool grown into them as well. So there's quite a few things that are going on in football that and the Super Bowl that have to do with us here in farming.
Who are you pulling for?
Don't care. It's football.
Doesn't matter? Okay.
Doesn't matter. I have no dog in this hunt this weekend.
Gotcha.
So, fine. Hey, whatever happens, happens.
As long as it's a good game. Commercials aren't... They're not as good as they used to be, though. They've got to up those.
I don't know. I saw a couple previews from Budweiser recently.
Oh, are they good?
They're still one of my favorites to
watch. Oh, good. Okay. Awesome. Yeah, awesome.
They'll be fun. So, looking forward to seeing that and more.
That'll be fun. Well, I want to thank everybody for joining us here on Weather and Ag in Focus. For Bridget, myself, make sure to tune in tomorrow, and then we'll have Gary on talking about the LRC on Wednesday. Don't go anywhere. The Jay Thomas Show, it's coming up next.